I believe the best way to continue serving my country is to join President-elect Obama, Vice President-elect Biden, the leaders here, and the dedicated public servants of the State Department on behalf of our nation.
Later today, New York Senator Hillary Clinton goes before the Senate Relations Committee for her confirmation hearings. For insight into what we might expect if and when Hillary Clinton takes the reins as Secretary of State, we are joined by Washington Post Group syndicated columnist Marie Coco, who has covered Senator Clinton since she was First Lady in 1993. Welcome and good morning, Marie.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very well. And we're wondering, is this the day that Hillary Clinton says goodbye to her presidential ambitions?
Well, I think that day came when she decided to accept the job, and there's several reasons for that. As you probably know, when you are in the cabinet, you are not allowed to maintain any kind of political committee or organization. You're not allowed to do fundraising. And so her vast organization, which includes, obviously, an organization behind her in New York, But more significantly, HILPAC, which has been her leadership pack in Washington and which is probably the most extensive database of women in politics, women supporters of hers, men supporters as well. But all of this infrastructure that she would need to mount a presidential campaign in the future effectively has to be disbanded. That's number one. And number two, I think when she took the job, certainly she knew, and I know some of her top aides were very aware of this, you don't go from the cabinet to the presidency. In my memory, in contemporary history, only one person has tried it. That was Elizabeth Dole, the Republican who had been a cabinet secretary twice in Republican administrations, and she made an effort in 2000 to capitalize on that and turn that into a presidential campaign, and she got absolutely nowhere, ended up dropping out of the campaign before the first primary was held. Well, it simply is not a springboard to higher elective office.
And Al Haig tried to run for president after he was Reagan's cabinet secretary, he went nowhere.
Right. Well, one of the things that the most significant thing that happens is that you are no longer your own political player or actor. You don't have your own agenda. You must pursue the agenda of the president. That is diametrically opposed to someone who is trying to stake out ground of his or her own, develop a political persona and a public presence of his or her own in preparation for a presidential run. So I think actually this is not the day she made that decision. The day she made that decision was a couple of months ago when President-elect Obama asked her to take the job and she accepted.
So having covered her for 15 years and observed up close this evolution of Hillary Clinton, how would you describe where you think she is as a person?
Probably this is what she tends to do. She takes the lemons, and as we all know from covering her public career, she's had many thrown at her, and tries to turn them into lemonade. I've never quite seen a politician who is so personally and politically resilient. I think the only parallel I can find is her husband, who, as we all know, has an amazing political resilience. She also is someone, if you've read her book, her autobiography, Living History, that she wrote after she left the White House, she talks about how she has to tune out what she calls the static. I have interviewed her many times, and that's what she calls it, this whole hoopla that the press tries to create about so-called Clinton drama. She actually creates very little drama. It's the press that seems to see drama in everything she does. And I recall very clearly when she first became senator, in fact, she hadn't even taken her oath yet, I'm not quite sure. But the tabloid, you know, Tom Daschle, soon to be Health and Human Services Secretary, then the Senate Democratic leader, was the Democratic leader. And I remember there was a spate of bizarre tabloid stories right before she joined the Senate, somehow linking her romantically to Tom. Actually, she had just joined the Senate. There had been a photograph of her leaning over to him on the dais at a hearing, which, by the way, senators do all the time. That's how they talk to one another. They cup their hand over the microphone and whisper in one another's ears while the hearing is going on. There had been a photograph of her and Tom Daschle doing that, which led to literally a spate of bizarre tabloid stories linking them romantically. And I remember her
I totally missed that, Marie. I don't recall that story at all.
I remember her telling me around that time that she had gone to Tom Daschle and said, you know, I'm awfully sorry, welcome to my world. You know, we have something in the Washington Press Corps that has become known as Clinton derangement syndrome, which is every hand gesture is interpreted, reinterpreted, blown out of proportion, and so forth. I don't expect we'll see a whole lot of this today because, frankly, she's going to be extraordinarily well prepared. She's going to be treated with the level of deference that senators tend to use with one another. Mm-hmm. And I think there might be a little bit of a dust up over President Clinton's foundation and fundraising and so forth. But that's frankly about it.
But her sense of drama, if there is one, and taking the media derangement aside for a second, let's assume that's a constant in everything. You know, runs along the lines of the vast right-wing conspiracy, making sort of dramatic kinds of statements about either the world or the state of affairs that then, you know, she has to live with for years later. What is the chance that her view of the world and her statements about world leaders are things she's going to have to live with as Secretary of State?
Well, I don't know how many, I mean, other than her campaign commentary during the presidential campaign, I don't know that she has made controversial statements about world leaders.
Well, for instance, not meeting with Iran, not her sort of being opposed to meeting with Iran. Barack Obama has suggested.
I just have to say, she was not opposed to meeting with Iran. What she was opposed to, this is a very important point, what she opposed during the primary was a presidential level meeting without preparation. In other words, in diplomacy, it is standard practice before you have a démarche like that, what they call a démarche, toward somebody like North Korea or Iran. There is months of groundwork and preliminary meetings.
Well, sometimes there is, sometimes. I mean,
by the diplomatic corps and lower level emissaries before you engage the President of the United States and all the prestige.
And there were plenty of high-level meetings during the Cold War, summit to summit, that didn't have that kind of preparation.
That's not true. I was here during the Cold War. Every meeting
Reykjavik?
That the President has, that meeting was planned. What was unplanned is what Reagan did once he got there. There's no question that there was intensive preparation for that summit. Where it all got sort of taken over by the two main players is when Reagan and Gorbachev decided to meet privately without aides. So it isn't accurate that there was.
All right. Fair point. I'll take all that. But then what is the suggestion as Hillary Clinton becomes Secretary of State? Is she more likely to engage in a sort of gear up to a fundamentally new relationship with Iran, or more likely to maybe put the brakes on something like that?
She is going to do what President-elect Obama wants to do. He made it clear on Sunday that we are going to have some kind of new approach there. What it is, I think, has not taken shape yet. But I have to tell you, I am not in the camp, and I've known her really for 15 years. She would not have taken this job if her intent was to somehow buck him, challenge him, carve out her own foreign policy. She probably knows better than anyone else because she was in the White House, because, in fact, when she was First Lady, she had a very memorable dispute with her husband's own foreign policy apparatus over the issue of whether she should go to Beijing and make what became that famous speech about human rights.
Mm-hmm.
So she understands full well that there is a foreign policy apparatus, that the president is in charge of it, that it's his foreign policy, not hers. And I am not of the view, again, I'm not a sort of a Clinton conspiracy theorist.
Right.
She did not take this job in order to carve out some grand foreign policy vision of her own.
So you're betting that she's definitely...
With one exception,
okay.
I do believe that she will reinvigorate the work that she had done as First Lady on the issues of women's political and economic development.
And we're going to have to leave it there, Marie, and we'll be looking for some of those questions today in the hearings. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Marie Coco, syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Writers Group. She's covered Hillary Clinton since 1993.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.